toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Murata.
And welcome to a very adults-only edition of the podcast, because we're looking at two movies that might definitely push your tastes if, depending where you fall in terms of extreme cinema, provocative cinema. And these are film reviews that we talked about during our weekly movie chat with Taylor Strano on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And this is the official Movie Squad podcast for RTRFM. And this is going to be collecting two films that we covered, and as well, I believe, an interview. The film that we started off with was looking at the new French body horror film, Titane, directed by Julia Durkenau. Simon, what did you look at?
I looked at Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, which is a Romanian film from director Radu Jude, who I was lucky enough to speak with, and we have the full uncut interview following my review. Two really interesting films, very R-rated movies, big neon flashing content warning at the top of this episode. You'll notice we haven't even described what the films are about or the content we're getting into, but don't worry, we definitely discuss it in detail with Taylor. But first up, the Cannes Palme d'Or winning film, Titane.
Morning, and look, it is heating up outside. Maybe you need to find some respite in a cool, dark room. If you do, you might be heading to the cinema, and if that is the case, maybe some recommendations for you this week. Coming from your Movie Squad, Tristan and Simon, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Look, I don't want to be out in the sun. I am very scared of the sun. I want to be in the cinema. I want to know what you've been watching this week. Tristan, let's start with Titane.
Well, it's interesting that you preface this by talking about respite, because the films that we're looking at this morning might send people back outside. I mean, these are some very...
hardcore R-rated films today.
These are not exactly comfort films that we're looking at, but we're going to start off by looking at Titane, which has had a lot of attention on it because it was the winner of the Palme d'Or this year at the Cannes Film Festival, and it was also the second film to win with directed by a woman since The Piano by Jane Campion, which says something about things, definitely, but it's great to see. And it's the second film from Julia Durkenau, who is someone that I was interested in seeing more from because they made this film Raw, which I think is still available on Stan to see, but is a very... She's a Belgian filmmaker. They're French movies, but Raw was a film about a young woman in veterinary college who finds out that she has cannibalistic desires. And it was a very extreme movie, but one that I found quite moving at the same in the same tone. Simon, were you a fan of Raw? Had you seen this film?
Yeah, Raw is really great, and it's got this nice clean concept to it, which was sort of equating a young woman's voracious sexual awakening with a cannibal discovering the taste for flesh and how both are sort of looked down upon by society. But it was really effective, really grisly and horrifying, and there were all these reports of people fainting in cinemas, vomiting in cinemas. those always tend to be overblown, and there have been the same claims regarding Titan as well. Yeah, so Raw was a very effective movie, so I was keen to see how her follow-up would equate.
Yeah, and it also, Raw had a great lead performance from Garrus Marillia, who's also in Titan in a supporting role. But this film has, two main performances, but it starts out with the character of Alexia, who we see as a young girl in the backseat of a car. Her father is driving, very disinterested in her humming, in her kind of like humming along with the engine. They have a car accident. Alexia suffers a head injury. We see that a metal plate has been inserted into her skull to help with her recovery. And she comes out of the hospital, she sees a car, and she walks over to it and hugs it. And then flash forward 20 years later, we're in this showroom with these Fast and the Furious cars. Music is blaring at us, and there are, you know, women kind of dancing exotically across all these cars. And then we see Alexia, played now by Agatha Rossell. And it really sets up the style of the movie at the start is so in your face and in extreme, because it deals with this sort of weird fixation, sensuality, eroticism with machinery, cars, steel, and her kind of desire as well. And then this is a hard film to talk about because it goes in several directions, and part of the impact of the film is that you just don't know what's going to happen next. And it goes into some, you know, violent sexual avenues, and it's not shy about showing all different types of fluid. Let me just say that. And then, but this is, I think, important, because if you were unsuspecting and walked into this film, you could leave after the first 15 minutes. But so this is definitely one for people who know a little bit about it, are keen to see something like this, because it does change gears and develops into something quite unexpected, particularly with the emergence of another character called Vincent, played by Vincent Lindon, who's a recognizable French actor. He's been in Claire Denis films, a lot of other films as well. But he is a firefighter. He leads this platoon of guys who just live on base, and their paths intersect. He is also someone who has a kind of fixation on the body. He's kind of addicted to steroids or growth hormones. He's kind of really fit, but and bulked out in a way that you probably, if you knew this actor, wouldn't anticipate. But they have a strange relationship that develops, and this film flirts with a lot. It flirts with, as I said before, the fusion of steel and flesh, cars and eroticism. It deals with kind of family dynamics in almost like a pseudo weird way. Anyway, this is a tough movie to talk about, but it's a film that has a lot of visual impact, and one that I was recoiling at certain moments because it is quite intense, but at the same time was kind of sweet and a strange movie. I'm still not sure entirely what I thought of it all, but I did like it. And I know that some people who I asked just some opinions from friends, some people really love this film as well, and some people I think will hate this film as well. Simon, where did you fall on this?
Look, not dissimilar from you. I think I'm a bit cooler on it ultimately because, as you point out, the film is saying a lot all the time. I don't know if it's saying anything that interesting. And even as a really visceral body horror film, I didn't feel it was as transgressive as its reputation's been built up. Certainly not as much as Raw. Not even as much as the next film we'll talk about, Bad Luck Banging, or a film I watched last night that we'll discuss in the coming weeks called The Scary of 61st. It is a very violent, very in-your-face movie that does touch on all the topics you mentioned, also identity and sexuality. But by throwing so much at the wall, nothing was really landing for me. So I enjoyed that visceral experience of having the movie unfold before me, but I don't know that I walked out thinking that there was really much to chew on. It felt like low art gussied up as high art to me.
You both made these. I don't think you realize this, but you both made these puns. Tristan, you said switching gears.
Oh, yes.
You said like something about biting, which made me think of the flesh eating. This feels like it goes from 0 to 100 in the first 10 seconds, and I'm not sure if, like, I have the mental capacity to watch anything like this for at least a little while longer.
Well, it's interesting with what Simon says, because this is a matter of degrees and where your tolerance lies, because, you know, I have also seen other people say this doesn't go further enough in terms of its playing with gender identity and fluidity, and it still kind of navigates around a certain gaze of the body, but, you know, I'm sure there are other people who would just not think of that and just think this is messed up. I can't believe anyone made this film. So
yeah, it probably speaks quite badly of me that I'm saying it's not as transgressive enough to my taste.
But look, I mean, so my definite advice would be just to read up on this film before you, like, I couldn't imagine anyone just like wandering in unthinkingly to see this film, because this does make a definite statement in the first 15-20 minutes. But then, yeah, in terms of what Simon was saying, and what you were saying before, the pun of like 0 to 100, it does do that, but then it kind of cools down in a way that will disappoint some, it sounds like Simon, maybe, and surprise others. So I would definitely like to revisit this and think about it a bit more. It's definitely challenging material, but it has like some images and moments that you won't forget. So Titane, it's out in cinemas now. If you're up for the kind of challenge, and depending on your tolerance level, you might be a Simon or a Taylor, you know, you could walk out thinking this is like the film of the year. And obviously a jury led by Spike Lee thought so and gave it the Palme d'Or. So that's another pip in its cap as well. Mm.
Оксана, ați vă rog.
Aveți rețeta?
Nu, dar nu vreau decât o pastiluță. Știți, sunt într-o situație și aș vrea să mă calmez.
From Movie Squad, Tristan and Simon join us. And Simon, we're just going to give a blanket content warning for this next film we're going to speak about on Breakfast.
Yes, very good idea, and quite amusing as well, because we've just finished talking about Titane, but now we're saying, all right, we really need to warn people about the next film. But really, it's just a bit of guidance, because the film's title is Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, and it is a Romanian film from director Radu Jude, who is a bit of a provocateur, a bit of a button pusher, not necessarily in terms of sexual content in his movies, though this one definitely crosses that boundary, but he does like to needle Romania about its cultural forgetfulness. And this movie continues on that thread, but begins in very startling fashion with ultimately what we glimpse as an amateur sex tape. We're seeing a couple at home performing certain acts, and I'm obviously not going to get into the description of them here, but there's sort of a comical farcity to it as well. It's definitely a highly sexualized moment between these two people, but there's also the mother-in-law yelling at them from outside the door. So there's a bit of black comedy to the sequence. But what begins in very startling fashion kind of falls down to reality pretty soon after, because we then meet the woman in the video, Emmy, played by Katia Pasciaru. She's in this sort of bland tan sort of suit and skirt. She's wandering around Budapest, and she's on the phone with her partner from the video, who we discover is her husband. Turns out that the video somehow has leaked and has gotten into the hands of the parents and staff and students of the school where she works as a teacher. And she's been summoned to the school for a nighttime sort of conference, but what is revealed to later be effectively a show trial in the school's courtyard. Now, the reason it's held in the courtyard is because this film was made and is set during the COVID-19 pandemic. So even though the idea for the movie germinated well before COVID-19, Radu Jude and the crew decided to proceed, and so the film has all the characters in masks, or specifically not wearing masks and refusing to wear masks, and they're having a socially distanced show trial in the school courtyard, where effectively Emmy is held to task, and the parents want her fired. The school is defending her somewhat. But ultimately, the point that Radu Jude is trying to make as co-writer and director of the film is that everyone is so fixated on this sexual scandal, despite the fact that there is much larger issues at hand. And there's a really interesting first act to the movie where Emmy, after getting the news on the phone, is just wandering around the streets, and the camera just kind of follows her. And your eye, searching for something, you know, to entertain yourself with or to understand what point the movie is trying to make, you're drawn to the vulgarities and obscenities of modern life. There's a big standee of Paw Patrol. You know, there's all these religious iconography and electoral posters and people with masks under their noses, you know, all these things that we are faced day to day that aren't tucked away on an adult film site or indeed within the confines of an R-rated film. And so there's quite a, you know, we talked about Titane having a lot to say. I think Bad Luck Banging has a lot to say as well. I am interested, because both of you have also seen this movie, whether you feel like the point is made and made and made effectively, or whether it's ultimately a bit of provocation without really too much meaning behind it. Taylor? You first, Taylor.
Oh, okay.
Because you've seen this movie.
I have seen this film. Look, I think so. I think it makes its point. I feel like there were probably a few too many plateaus in the film, particularly in the first two-thirds of the film, maybe. But I also get that's kind of a point of, like, the... what am I trying to say? The tiresome act of trying to get the point across, right? Like,
sure.
There's so much semantics that holds up actual progression, particularly in that final sort of show trial scene. There's just so much back and forth about irrelevant stuff.
And it definitely isn't helped by the fact that, you know, there's a lot of misogyny at play, and definitely the fact that we never see the man in the video. You know, we only see his appendage, I suppose, but we never see him kind of taken to task for it. It's specifically the woman who is held to account. Tristan, how did you feel about Bad Luck Banging?
I mean, I was very intrigued by this film, but I really did like it. It is interesting because it has another subtitle where it says, like, a sketch for a popular film, and it breaks things up into chapter headings. And it a bit like Titane, it starts out in a really, like, full-on way, but then sort of calms down into something else. And the different styles of the kind of three distinct parts after that opening, like her just wandering around the city. Then there's another section which is kind of like a sort of dictionary of terms where the director is kind of making his points about Romanian society. And it is interesting. There are some things that are explained to the audience, and then some things that I'm sure I'm not picking up. But it still, I think, applies to any society as well, even here in Australia, just the way that, you know, culture, history, memory is shaped by the kind of institutions and the crossover between the personal and the public. And then, yeah, look, this has a lot to say, and it does so in a very direct and blunt way. But I did like it. And particularly, I think, even though most of the performance, you know, is covered by a mask, I think the lead actor was just so great, and such a great kind of fixation of sort of just someone having to just undergo all this kind of pressure and stress and just like degradation, but just having to just soldier on because they know that at heart they're at least right in their convictions.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, you are right, absolutely. The film does have plateaus. You know, it starts with a literal, you know, bang, and then kind of has this very sort of slow, meandering pace to the first sort of two acts. But I like that first act is very sensorial. You know, you kind of put to task and going, okay, what am I watching here? And it didn't kind of activate, I think, the, you know, the synapses into going, all right, I'm going to read this film, you know, I'm going to actually interpret it. And the director, you know, I was fortunate enough to interview him, and you played it on Tuesday, Taylor, but we'll have the podcast with the entire interview. He argued that he presented much more neutral imagery, whereas I read it as, you know, very aggressive vulgarity and obscenity. So I think, you know, you'll bring a lot to the movie as well. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the middle section because it's kind of this memory test or history lesson. And then it all informs that final act, which is very stylized and really strikingly filmed. So, and again, the performance is great. The back and forth is so frustrating and funny and just absurd. It has a sort of Monty Python flavor to it. But again, the movie is also bookended with its first and final shots with some of the most startling things you'll see on screen. Certainly the last image is very pointed and not for the faint of heart. But I really enjoyed this film. I don't want to call it an essay or an academic experience because there is a lot of fun and thoughtfulness to it. But a sketch for a popular film is a good way to describe it. It's not the kind of format most people would anticipate from a 90-minute movie.
I'm really curious. The three of us, we all watched it individually at our homes. Would you watch this in a cinema surrounded by other people?
Well, I think that would be unto itself would be an interesting experience. I mean, most of the movies I watch have my wife asleep on the couch next to me, and inevitably she'll sort of roll over and open her eyes and just see the most horrific things imaginable, or just very surprising things. But she knows I no longer have to make the argument as to what I'm watching. But in a cinema, I think it would be very, very fun to kind of watch other people experience it, because I think both of these films, I would be surprised if there weren't walkouts in any screening of these movies. But then seeing people, you know, get uncomfortable in their seat or settle in, who laughs along with it, who engages, they're very interesting communal experiences because they're not passive experiences. That's why I think it'd be fun to see in a cinema.
And I think as well, like, it just reminds me of when I saw 9 Songs in a cinema, and just like, I think there's a kind of natural turn for an audience when presented by quite graphic sexuality to just start laughing. And this film just kind of already meets you halfway because it is funny, it is silly, and it's over the top. So I mean, it'll be curious, but I think the filmmaker kind of knows that if, you know, is meeting the audience halfway, or the kind of just that discomfort and the way that awkwardness gets released through just laughing. Yeah.
Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn is out in cinemas this week. We did hear earlier on Breakfast This Week from director Radu Jude in conversation with Simon. We just played you a small portion of it, but the entire, 20 minutes worth? Is that how long you
Yeah, the uncut
for?
The discussion.
Uncut. will be available as part of this week's Movie Squad podcast. So subscribe wherever you pick your podcasts up from. Of course, you can find it through the RTRFM website as well.
Adică noi suntem la o școală bună. Sunteți niște jigodi.
Asta e inadmisibil.
Niște ședință umană. Cu cât opinia pe mai mărginită, mai importantă.
This is a film that is very much about our current moment, with characters who are masked up and dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, but worrying about the far less serious issue of a leaked sex tape. My understanding is that the idea for the film does predate the pandemic. So what was the original seed of inspiration for Bad Luck Banging?
Well, first of all, I'm happy that you mentioned that the film is about the contemporary times in a way, because I think that was the main issue for me as well in making the film. Some people say, well, it's just about porn, a film about porn. I said, well, it's not about porn. It's about how in this small videotape story, the sex tape story, comes together a lot of important issues of our current society regarding the rights and liberties we have, how the morality works in the digital world, which the technology is somehow changing and our morals remain the same, changes at a smaller pace. So from this arises a kind of a conflict. And yes, the film was, of course, conceived before the pandemic, and it was supposed to be shot, before that. And then the pandemic hit, and of course, we had to adjust the story to it. But I think it just made it, in a way, in my mind, more fit for the nowadays. Because not only that, we have a big issue to think about, which is the pandemic, and we are still having a lot of struggles about minor issues, but also because I think the amount of time since the pandemic started, by each of us spent on a digital world, in Zooms or I don't know, in emails or teleworking, all these things, is bigger and bigger and bigger, and more and more. So I think this is a kind of, I think it's a story fit for that time. And because I wanted a contemporary story, I accepted. I said to my producer that whatever happens, we will put it in the film because this is part of the new era we live in.
Absolutely, and I think it works really well, especially because it's sort of unspoken in many ways. It's very visually apparent that everyone's got masks on and dealing with it. But yeah, much of the discussion of the film.
It's an absurd, almost a surreal element to see the masked people shouting at each other. And yeah, I even told the actor that even if the pandemic would stop by miracle before the shooting, I would still keep the mask on because I like it so much.
Well, in the press notes for the movie, you do mention that there was this tension on set because this was a new thing. There were some people who were maybe defying the mask mandate. Were you concerned as a filmmaker, once you had that confidence, yes, you could make the movie, was there that concern about keeping people safe or keeping them from each other's throats?
No. The thing is, it's like that. It's, you know, a film crew is very, very, in a way, very... how should I say, very democratical thing. We are, or at least my film crews, my film sets are like that. We try to have the same food for everybody, the same time of work for everybody, the same rights and liberties for everybody. So when we decided to make the film in the COVID time and we had some regulations to follow, like the crew had to wear masks all the time, we had some protocols to follow and so on and so forth, we organized a gathering in the first day of shooting with everybody and explained the rules and said, do you want to go on with the film? Do we accept the rules? And if somebody, he or she is not able or doesn't want to follow them, no problem. We can understand that and we can separate on it and not work together. There's no problem for that. And everybody said, no, we do the film like that. It's no problem. And then, of course, some people didn't respect the rules. And, well, it's their option. I'm not judging it. But the problem is that this created the tension because many people in the cast or crew said, why I'm respecting the rules, staying with the mask on my face in the heat the whole day, and he or she do not respect them. Why is that? So I said, this created the tension because there were or people who felt vulnerable, and remember it was before the vaccine appeared. People felt very some people had vulnerable conditions and came to me or to the producer and saying, look, I came because you promised that the protocols will be respected, but some people do not respect it. So yeah, this created a tension, but in the end, nobody got infected and sick. So I'm really, really happy about that.
The movie opens with Katia Pascuro as Emmy, and she's filming an at-home sex tape with her character's husband. And from the first minute of the movie, the audience knows what they're getting into, or hopefully knows what they're getting into. I do have to ask, firstly, is that Katia or a mixture of a body double with CGI? Because I'm interested in how you have that conversation with an actor to be that vulnerable on screen, or whether there are elements of movie magic that go into the sex and the graphic sex that occurs.
Well, first of all, I must say that in Romania, there's a kind of, for many actors, less than in other countries, like in Western Europe, for instance, there's a kind of reservation, a kind of refusal that many actors have, not only to perform sex on screen or on stage, but to appear nude. Sometimes there are actors that say, well, I will never undress in front of a camera, and I'm not judging, I can understand them. No problem. It's everybody has his or her own limits, and we must respect that. But I still feel it's a little bit of ridiculousness because, you know, to be an actor means to use your body for expressing things, expressing the life, and to be naked is part of life. Sex is a part of life. So I'm not speaking about real sex, of course. That would be maybe too far. But Katya is not like that. Katya, and I didn't know that because I didn't choose her for that thing. But I didn't make a casting session. I knew I want to work with her because I saw her in the political independent theater she's playing. And also because I've done some casting sessions with her previously, and I always liked her, but somehow I felt it's not the best part for her. And for this character, for this role, I thought of her from the beginning of the project. So I met her, I told her, I gave her the script to read, and she, the first meeting we had, before me saying something, she said, "Don't worry, I don't have any problem with nudity. I don't have any problem with performing sex on screen if necessary. I don't have any problem with a blowjob. I don't have any problem with that." And I said, "Well, but Katya, at least the penetration scene, we should do it with a body double." And she said, "Yeah, okay, if you can, it's good. But if not, don't worry, I do it." And so she's for the penetration scene, we just replaced her with another porn actress. And the husband was a porn actor, a professional porn actor. His lack of erection in the scene is part of the profession. I don't know. and then we just did the scene very, very easy. It was very, I was much more stressed than they were, the actor, the actress or the actor. So it was very easy to do. In 1 hour and 2 hours, we finished it.
It was new for you, but not for them.
But no, for Katya, it's new as well.
Well, sure, of course.
As I said, she was like, no problem to do it. And for the porn actors, of course, they said, "Oh, but this is only that? You want only that?"
Well, it's interesting. So, yeah. I mean, it's contrasted, obviously, with the first act of the film, really, which is Emilia walking around the streets, and there are these vulgarities on display, right? These things out in the open that are vulgar, you know, depending on your stance. You've got these big sort of religious, you know, standees, or there's a big sign for Paw Patrol. There's also this very sexually suggestive chocolate advertisement that says, "I like it deep." Now, how much of that was you and Emilia and the crew discovering vulgarities on the street? How much of it was you putting these into play? You know, faking things, or, you know, I'm just curious what that level is of just roaming around and just how easy it was to find vulgarity.
Well, it's not only vulgarity, you know. It's interesting because many people say, well, even in Romania, they say, well, he searched and found only the ugly parts of Bucharest, because we could go in this park or in this place and we find nicer things. Why didn't he shot this? And I said, actually, there's a lot of beautiful, I mean, of positive things in the film. There's a tree at some point, there's a flower at some point, there's things which are more neutral and not, and because I didn't want only to show vulgarity, I wanted to show a little bit of more complex things, to invite the viewer to judge them and to analyze the image. But of course, there's a lot of vulgarity because this is how this city is. And obscenity and classism. And these are because, actually, that was the idea of the film, to contrast the so-called vulgarity of the first porn scene of the sex tape, to contrast that with real issue, real vulgarity, real obscenity, real depravity, which is around us, and we got used with it that we don't even see it. But also, there's moments of beauty sometimes in all of this shit.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, it builds to this sort of final act, this show trial of Emilia. And there are lots of specific Romanian references in there, but I think there's a very global and relatable fear of sex and puritanism. You know, I'm curious, you've sort of alluded to it. I do want to know how the film has been received in Romania. But in general, why are we all so worried about sex and nudity, even amidst a pandemic and everything else that's going on with the world.
So, yeah, you mentioned that there's Romanian references, and it's true. It is a very local film in a way. But this comes from also from my belief in local art, in local cinema in this case, because if I see a film from Australia, I really want to see something from there, like, I don't know, like Charlie's Country of Rolf Doher, which is about the indigenous population of Australia, or like the film, there's a montage film, a beautiful film, I think, made by a collective called Soda Jerk, Terror Nullius.
Yeah, where they mash up Mad Max and all these different iconic Australian movies.
Exactly, and they speak also about the massacre of indigenous population. So yeah, for me, that's a very local film, because I don't know the most of the Australian realities and films that it make a reference to, but still, what I get is so rich that it doesn't matter that I don't get it. I can hint, I can have an intuition about something. So this is, I think, in another form, truthful to the film I've done, that is local, but it's an invitation for the audience, like an Australian audience so far away from us, to see something from a country that they don't even know it exists sometimes, you know. So, and then regarding the second part of the question, I don't think it's a fear of sex in itself, but I think it's, as I said, all of a sudden that the representation of sex in the internet world is sometimes so unexpected for many people that they don't know how to relate to it. Because probably 30 years ago, a story like that wouldn't have been possible, you know. And that's one thing. And the other thing, I think it has to do with the status of a teacher, because the main character is a teacher. So, you know, I think for teachers, people have somehow unrealistical and stupid expectations, like a kind of idealized morality that the teacher should have, because, you know, they are educating the next generation. Mm. So you cannot expect a teacher to behave, but only according to the book. And of course, this never happens, and I think this is where the hypocrisy comes from, because it's this fake false expectations we have regarding teachers, and we apply them to their whole being, to their whole life. So a teacher is supposed to be non-sexual being, you know.
This week, I received an email from the Australian distributor of the film, noting that on Facebook, the trailer had been taken down due to nudity and the fact that the movie has porn in the title.
Well, actually, I know, because we have a Facebook page which is called Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, and it exists, and there's no problem with that. I think they had to go a lot, to have a dialogue with Facebook before with somebody.
Right.
I mean,
to explain that it was a movie and not just pornography. But the irony here, of course, is that Facebook is often pretty slow to take down videos of live stream violence, COVID misinformation, which sort of proves the point of the movie, right? That said, it is a movie with porn in the title. And I have to ask, you know, are you trying to be provocative? Is it something that you kind of do want to generate controversy with, generate even a little bit of pushback to prove that point that the movie makes so well?
A little bit, yes, and a little bit more in the Romanian version of the title, which is the same, but it has different connotations, because, for instance, the word for banging or shagging, that would be babardeală, is not only considered a vulgar word, not extremely vulgar, but quite vulgar, but it's also of Roma origin. So many people, because of racism or internal racism, wouldn't use that word, because it's not only vulgar, but it's of impure origin, you know. And,
right.
And also, when the film was awarded in the Golden Bear in Berlinale, in the Berlin Film Festival, there were journalists or television speakers that didn't say the title of the film. They say the newest film of Radu Jude won an award or something like that. They didn't say the title. So I think that's good that it provoked at least a reaction to that, even if it was just to push it off. It is provocative. I wouldn't imagine it so provocative. I wouldn't know that that the world is so stiff towards this kind of things. I never imagined that.
Congrats on the film. I really enjoyed it, and yeah, really looking to see how people take to it.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Great to hear more about a film that will definitely push some people's sensitivities, particularly in the opening part of the movie, but to understand why Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, the ideas behind it and the making of it. Great work, Simon, interviewing the director.
Thank you very much. And now that we've pushed your buttons, you should start smashing buttons too. Subscribe to RTRFM's podcast, especially the Movie Squad podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes and wherever you can do such a thing. Tell your friends, share the love, and yeah, thank you once again for listening in. Tristan, it's always a pleasure. We've got one more week of new release reviews before our top tens. But before that, we'll have a special episode, double episode, of the Movie Squad pod. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? What's coming up?
Sure. So we've got a discussion that was so expansive. It's two parts. But one film that was released recently that we didn't get a chance to talk about on the weekly show was The Many Saints of Newark, the kind of prequel to the HBO series The Sopranos that looks at the kind of rise of Tony Soprano as played by James Gandolfini's son. I was very fortunate, Simon, unfortunately we couldn't have you there, but
I haven't seen the movie yet.
But we had great perspectives from Soprano fans, Libby Noble, Jackson Horden, and then someone I assumed was a Soprano fan but actually hadn't watched the series at all, Axel Carrington, to give that important perspective on someone. You know, does The Many Saints of Newark just work as a movie on its own? This is a two-part episode that'll be coming through the RTRFM website, but more importantly, the Movie Squad podcast stream.
Thanks for listening.